It doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. Oh. I guess I didn't edit that very well. I do have to admit that some of this stuff was happening right before this. Okay. So, you know, a lot of sounds, even if it's a bass guitar or a kick drum, just thinning out the low end a little bit, and that's, you know, too much. But you know, you listen to it until you start to hear it thin out a little bit, and then you back off a little bit, you know. So, and then, you know, if you want to take out some of the low, you can do that. Or the low mids, if you can do that. There's all sorts of stuff we can do. A lot of times you'll have a problem, and this is, you know, when you have something that just sounds terrible and it's sticking out too much, it's the seek and destroy thing. So just, yeah, most engineers know about this, but you just set up a narrow boost and you sweep until you find the awfulest sound you can find. You know, it's like, oh, that's it. You know, a lot of times it's an electric guitar with a SM57 right on the dust cover, you know, just right on the center of the dust cover. That's the most brittle and annoying sound you can get from a guitar. You know, as you go towards the outer edge, it gets warmer. But, you know, you can go sweep through that and find that. And then once you discover the most gosh-awful frequency you can imagine, then you just go down and change that peak into a cut, you know, that boost into a cut, and you can widen the bandwidth up a little bit. And you can really make a big difference in the sound. So a lot of these things, it's just about shaping sounds that fit together. And sometimes, you know, I'll do a thing where I'll, at around 300 hertz or so, 350, I'll cut the big chunk out of the kick drum, put a little bump in it, you know, take off the low end. And then a lot of times the snare drum sounds great in there, you know, so it's like you can boost it there. And the net effect is that you haven't really increased the amount of energy. You've just made it sound better, bigger, you know. So when we deal with a broadcast environment, that all of that stuff is just super important. So let's move on. Low frequency management. So the same thing. I mean, it's like you can see this meter move. I think I showed you that earlier, where it's, you know, the low end is really what I'm focusing on controlling. And so that controls the mix there. Let's see here. It seems like I've got a couple music examples, and I'm not seeing them. That's really weird. I thought that I did everything. So anyway, while I look for these, it'd be a good time for questions, if anybody has any. I'm going to go out of the share screen mode. Are we doing good?
Yeah, actually, that might be a good place, unless there's something specific that you want to cover. That might be a good time for us to shift into our next state. But if you missed something, we should probably cover it if you'd like to.
Yeah, no, I would like to cover this because it's where it all comes together. So
okay.
Let me see. No, that's not going to work. Let's see if this is it. It's a little bit of a cluster happening here.
Well, you were looking for live excitement.
Yeah, I did. I love it. You know, it's all going to fall apart, but we're all going to go home happy. So, I mean, what I want to show you is I've got a couple of the streams that we did, and I want to show definitely how the mics were used and how easy it can be if you don't have a lot of other stuff happening. And My brain is over processing here because I'm doing two things at one time. Because if you look at those mics, like we were talking, I showed you the Audio-Technica, the 4047, you know, all those large diaphragm studio condenser microphones. When you yeah, this will work. So I just need to put it on a thing. I don't know why it's not anywhere, but it's going to be somewhere now. There we go. It's inputting, it's inserting, it's inputting. There we go.
Don't forget to reshare your screen.
Oh yeah, don't forget that. Which means I have to go back to Zoom. Share screen. Let me try something here first. Tell me if this sounds better or worse once we're doing it. If it sounds worse, then I just did the wrong thing, but I think I didn't. So we're going to share the screen. Audio. Here we go. And going into presenter mode. And I'm going to play this. So, you know, it's two people with guitars, and I just use three mics. I've got you know, this 40 50 45 here on the tom-tom. It's a tom covered with a piece of material, but the guitars aren't plugged into anything, and I just balanced them with just the vocal mic, you know. So she's standing back from the vocal mic, he's just standing there, and he sings sometimes, and it comes through that mic totally fine. And so the bad part about having a lot of microphones is that you have a close, muddy sound when they're close. And when you get back off of them, if it's something like an SM58, the way that the frequency response graph goes, I mean, it drops off, you know, at about 150 or 200 hertz. Those mics take a nosedive to the left, and so they don't pick up a full sound from a distance. They get really thin, and they have a built-in presence peak, which makes it work better when you get close, because that proximity effect that, you know, everything gets louder in the low end when you get close, that helps. But these other kind of mics, and this is a blue bottle rocket, and that's the one when Christy, this is my daughter, this is the second week we did it. Same setup as the first week, but we, not video-wise, we stepped the video up. That she said, well, yeah, it might be nice if the mics looked pretty. So that's really why I chose that, but it really worked great. It's got four, I've got the suitcase model. It's got four different capsules with it, and they all sound a little different. And this is the M7 that sounds a little U47-ish to me. And then this mic over here on the other guitar, the black one, is a Mojave 200, which is a great tube mic. I mean, it's really, really nice microphone. The first week I used a Royer R10. It's the new Royer, the less expensive one, and I really like that mic a lot. It's a little brighter than the others, so it's cool. And then under the floor tom, when you hear the floor tom, it has a little bigger sound because it has one of those low freaks under it. I just set it right under it, and so it's a little bigger than just, you know, a mic over the tom. So yeah, play a little bit. So, it sounds clean. There's no EQ on any of those microphones. Zero. It was painless and easy to do. And, you know, big picture, man, maybe I might turn the guitars down, but when anytime you have less people, you need more background. You need more support. You know, it's like you need the, I'm always telling the students here to get the mix to hug the vocals. You know, that vocal has to be the prime thing at the pinnacle, but the mix has to hug them. And so, you know, that's kind of what's going on here. And then now we've moved to a different thing. We're still using similar techniques, but I wanted to show this too. And this has I mixed this on the iPad with and record the iPad. You know, you just go into your preferences there and just record the screen. Now it's very, very easy. So you can see what's going on with the iPad. All of this kind of has sync issues because of the way it comes back from Facebook and the way it goes into Facebook. But you can forgive that, hopefully. And so now where we've gone is we're plugging the guitars in because there's a live drum set. Every week it's been like, oh, let's try this, let's do that. And then a few weeks ago, I was like, I think we can get a click track going. And no, a few weeks before that, it was in-ear monitors. That's what it was. And then click track. And so it's kind of everything is moving up there. And we usually have, several people on the team, so it's still very scaled down. But I used this on, and before the drums came in, I was using the microphone on the guitar. The guy guitar is one of the Audio-Technica 350s. It's like a horn microphone too, small diaphragm condenser on a gooseneck. And this one clamps onto the body of the guitar. Man, it sounds great. There's no pickup that can sound like that. And it works okay live if the player's willing to deal with it. And it's something like a James Taylor kind of a thing, I suppose, would be, the kind of player that would really merit that kind of really nice guitar sound. In this setting, the drums right next to the drums, so that it was a problem in that. So that's something I just learned that week when we did it the first time. And but the other guitar, my daughter's guitar, is plugged into a direct box. It's a radial Firefly. Yeah, and it's kind of the natural in is optimized for these kinds of pickups, so it sounds really nice. But the vocal mics, and this is something, it's another technique that we can use in this environment where there's no sound system. They're not hearing. I mean, until they did a lot of this where all they heard was just themselves. They weren't even using monitors. But there they are, and so we could still use the studio mics. The mic that's on her is an AKG large diaphragm tube microphone, and it's the one that has the sweepable puller pattern selector. So it sweeps from omnidirectional on the right all the way to bidirectional on the no omnidirectional on the left, to bidirectional on the right, and anywhere in between. And then the mic on him is the AT4047 MP multi-pattern. So they're both multi-pattern microphones. The reason I have them like that is it doesn't block up faces out as much for the stream, but really I'm using them both in bidirectional mode. And that's so that I can aim the side of those microphones right down at the guitar and really get next to no leakage from the guitar into the microphone. It's like isolation. So the vocals aren't competing with the guitars. So it works really well. That's a studio technique. That's what you would do in a studio if you were trying to do something like that. Basically, the guy on the right, that'd be an awesome studio setup because you can aim the mic right down at the guitar, the side of the mic right down at the guitar. And if anybody who doesn't know, I mean, the bidirectional mic's positive on one side, negative on the other. So anything that goes on the side gets canceled out. That just the sum is nothing. So it's good. So let's listen to a little of where this has ended up then. So that little sound on the snare drum, that's all that's coming out of the top mic of the snare drum because he's got a big pad on it. But where you're hearing the snare is leakage through the guitar mic. And so, I mean, that's a little bit of an issue. And there's a couple spots where I actually turned that sound, snare sound up a lot and it really added a lot of snap. So the EQ that you see there is what's on Christy's mic, just a little roll off in the low end, which I could have done that same thing. I might have done it on the mic. I might have put the high pass filter on the mic. I can't remember. But she sounds just as clean and clear as it gets, you know. It's a real nice vocal sound, and he's the same way. He's got a lot mellower sound.
Yes, Jesus. When I feel alone, I have a place to go.
So the other thing that's going on here, and this is important for streaming too, if you're trying to get a good mix, I'm using a lot of pre-delay on the reverbs, and this Lexicon board, when I first got it, it's like I turn the reverb up and it's like, man, that sounds like a Lexicon. It's like I had, because, you know, I've used a lot of the 224s and the 480s and all of that stuff, all the, and, you know, the 300s, the smaller ones and the bigger ones, and they have a sound that's not really... it's pretty unique, you know. It's a great reverb sound, and so it's like, golly, I really like those. And what the stuff we've been using before, it's like, oh, I didn't really like those reverbs a lot, but this is great. And then when I went to the first NAMM, I asked the guys, and it's like, I don't remember what the story is, but they are the algorithms from the Lexicon reverbs. So, but I use a lot of pre-delay, and the pre-delay, if you're not familiar with it, you know, pre-delay is the distance between the onset of the dry sound and the onset of the reverb, so you can hear the dry sound all by itself, and then the reverb. So if you want to really have something that sounds big, and she's got a lot of reverb on her, but she still sounds pretty close, it's because there's probably 100 millisecond pre-delay. And so, you know, psychoacoustically, I guess, you hear her dry. So she sounds like she's right in the front. If I was to turn that pre-delay off, she'd sound like she was in the back of the room. So you can hear that when you listen to it. It's like you hear it kind of unfolding around her words. I wanted to show that too. That's the sub kick. And I don't have it set so that it sounds really big, and it can't get really big because I've got that multiband limiter on the back end, but it adds a lot of body to the kick. So here you'll hear it along with the kick mic here. That's with the kick mic. And that was the EQ that I have on that sub kick. Not that I don't know that I'm actually doing a whole lot, because that's kind of what it naturally has. But it's a super valuable sound, and the kick then can be a real snappy little kick sound and just use the body from the other mic. And you can control it then so that it doesn't dominate the level into the stream. And on that kick drum, I just have an Audix D6 sitting in the middle. Or in the drum on a pillow. And, you know, that's a nice mic. It kind of has a built-in disco curve in it, so it's got a lot of high end and nice thump, and so it's a decent mic. And so along with that sub kick, or the low freak, it's a pretty nice sound. Oh, yeah. And also, I mean, always check the polarity on those when you have two mics on a kick drum, because there'll be one setting where it'll, I can't believe I did that. There'll be one setting where it'll sound good, and another setting where it will just sound bad. There might have been something else to show here.
Bill, we've got some questions, and we're at 8:40 as well. Just
okay. Well, here, let me do this one. Let me do this one bit, because this is important. So, again, because it pertains so much to the stream. So, Omar, our pastor, awesome dude, he can get on it and speak really loud, and then he'll get really quiet. And so, you know, if I'm doing sound, and I don't always do it, but when I do it, I'm riding him all the time. You know, I'm just riding him. Unless I do something like this, and this is something that we would do on a drum set. It's kind of like parallel compression, if you know what that is. And it isn't really parallel compression because there aren't two compressors on this, but I'll explain that. On a drum set, you can kind of lightly compress the drum kit, and it sounds nice. But then you can also do a split off the same mix of the drums, and you can run it through a multiband limiter, and you can just squish it, you know, just totally awful drum sound, totally compressed, and you can, you know, accentuate the high end or the low end. But then when you turn that up, it's kind of like what we're talking about with the luffs. It's kind of like it starts to sound a lot louder and fuller, but you can keep the transient. So what's happening with this, his vocal mic, which I just have a wired Sennheiser lavalier on him, is down here. You see, this will pop up here in the front in a second, parallel path. So I'm really hitting the compressor hard. And you just blend the wet and dry signal. So the dry has all the transient information, all the stuff that makes it clean and clear. And then you just bring this wet up until it's more consistent. And literally, once I mess with this, I can get it so I don't have to touch it. You know, it's just like he's always the right volume. So it's a really valuable technique. And I know that a lot of people don't do it. But once you start to do this, you'll love it.
Be on the lookout. We're going to be talking more about that in the next couple of weeks, about when our church gatherings will start to open up as we can be together face to face. Man, I long for that day to soon happen. I'll be honest with you, I'm getting a little tired of just speaking.
So right here, this shows I'm using a gate on him, but it's just a little, you know, you can't use it like a gate. You have to use it like an expander. So it's just going down, you know, a few dB, and it's at the front end because that's about the only place you can get this, because once you start compressing it, it's crazy. And you know, you can see it move, and it's definitely helping with some of the breaths that result from this kind of technique.
To the camera, I can't wait to see all your faces in front of me. So what's going to help me today is I had my beautiful wife stand right behind the camera. So my hope is that that's going to help me kind of get through today's message. But I'm so thankful for that. Now, last week, I shared my heart as well as addressing some passages of scripture in regards to
So this is all squashed and kind of ugly.
How the church ought to stand against racism. You know, I express this as a stand that was not against law enforcement, because we believe that we are to uphold those that
But when
that
you find
us,
the right spot for it,
our law enforcement community, and we are so thankful signal. For you, and we're in support of you and
now
the
that
jobs
needs to
that
go
you
up
do.
To probably, we you know, -7 or -6 or whatever to get it to be really clean and clear. And I mess with those, but. It's an important technique. I wanted to make sure that we got to that, and hopefully this is all helpful stuff. I know that in terms of building a mix for a stream, everything we covered is really, really important, and hopefully it wasn't too mixy and not enough streamy, but so there you go. It's probably time to call it. All right, Steve?
All right. Well, let's get to a couple of the questions here from the chat. Patrick is wondering how you connect everything, and he's asking about whether it's going to be a copy of the presentation, and will you be able to translate it into a diagram, and what's your take on Dante connection with live streaming?
Well, you know, Dante is a communication protocol, and it's Dante and AVB, yeah, AVB, and you know, the protocol that Alan Heath has. I mean, all of those protocols are very, very powerful, and it's just a way to get a signal into the stream. So I don't know that Dante is a specific thing that would be other than just a digital way to get your mix into a stream, and that's the best way. I mean, if you can get into some digital format, that's why I'm using that interface, to get into a digital format. But if you can, there's a Dante card for this, Helen and Heath, there's Dante cards for all the mixers now, you know, everybody's got a capacity to do that. And it's just about, you know, having more flexibility in terms of getting to your computers and in terms of routing. It's a network thing. So I don't know that Dante plays into that as much. In terms of what I'm talking about, because it's all about shaping a mix.
Yeah.
And what was the other, what was it?
It's whether you're going to have a diagram for this once we're posting it. And there will be a recording posted at some point online. Bill Bainbridge asks the question, if you have any experience so far with remote multi-instruments having to stream live. If so, any ideas about reducing latency generally to make streaming successful, i.e. less than 20 milliseconds for the players?
Yeah, and even 20 milliseconds is tough. I mean, you know, in studios, you've been doing it with ISDN lines since the 90s. So it's possible to do it, but it's not possible to do it right now with any of the normal live streams. You have to have CDN, Content Developer Network. You have to have a more proprietary system that can handle the bandwidth. So I haven't found anything that's pedestrian that will actually let you play together. You know, Pro Tools has their projects thing, but it's not playing together. None of it is.
And that came from Rocket Networks, by the way. That's from the old days.
Right.
Evolved into that.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody else knows about...
Jan Kazam was brought up from Lawrence. And that's probably a whole meeting on its own for that kind of issue at this time.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew, but if Lawrence is probably doing some pretty cool stuff. So, what was that? Band Kazam?
Jam Kazam. And it's Bleeding Edge right now. And Doug Heyman says he's got to get up early, so he's heading out. So we're losing some of our people. I'm wondering if you want to shift over into introductions or if you have any other type of wrapping up, because those are the questions.
I'm done, man. For me, that's pretty much, that's it. So hopefully it helps some people.